5 years ago exactly, on the last day of February 2004, the elected president of Haiti, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, was overthrown. The coup makers were the governments of Canada, France, and the United States. The coup makers claimed it was their dedication to democracy that motivated their intervention. Following the coup and forced exile of Aristide, now living in South Africa, a United Nations military force has been occupying and intervening in Haitian affairs, also in the name of democracy. Have these interventions benefited the people of Haiti? To discuss the current situation in that country, we've contacted Brian Concannon in Oregon. He is a prominent human rights lawyer and the director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. Maybe you could start with giving us an idea of the living conditions that most Haitians today, 5 years after the coup, are living.
It's very difficult living conditions, both in terms of political and economic and social human rights. The numbers range depending on who's giving the numbers, but it's generally somewhere between $300 to $500 per year is the per capita GDP. And getting by in Haiti might be a little bit easier than it would be in Canada and the U.S. on a dollar a day, but not much easier. And so if you kind of think about starting a month with $30 in your pocket and seeing how far that would last you, that gives you some idea of how Haitians live. Most don't have adequate housing. Most have almost no access to formal medical care. Over half the kids of primary school age don't get to go to school, and most Haitians don't eat even two full meals a day.
We had some indication, I guess, of those conditions just this week. More than 200 people were fleeing on unsafe boat, trying to reach the United States with children aboard as well. Is that a regular marker of how desperate the living conditions are in the country?
That's part of the marker. I mean, immigration flows are also sensitive to weather patterns and other issues. But the fact that people are willing to get on an overcrowded boat with a very large chance of dying en route and a very small chance of actually getting into the United States, it does show the desperation that most Haitians have. And when you talk to people who've tried that crossing, they'll say, "I know it's dangerous. I hate to leave my community, but that's my only hope for survival."
The hurricane certainly was another natural disaster that added to the desperate living conditions.
Yes, but the hurricanes aren't completely natural disasters. If you look at a map of the hurricane path, especially the four that hit Haiti this summer, they hit Cuba much worse. And in Haiti, hundreds of people died, and in Cuba it was dozens. And the loss of crops, of houses, was much less in Cuba than it was in Haiti, and that's in large part because the Haitian hills are deforested, and that the government has not done a good job of both doing infrastructure work, drainage ditches and roads to deal with floods, but also doesn't do a great job of basic civil defense in terms of getting evacuation plans. And that actually comes back to us in North America, because one of the main reasons why the Haitian government has not been able to enforce its laws on reforestation, has not been able to effectively build infrastructure, is the destabilizing effect of our policies, especially the 2004 coup d'etat, but also other policies both before and since.
Well, let's go back to that coup after the overthrow of Aristide by foreign intervention. There was an election in Haiti, and René Préval was elected president. There were many efforts to rig that vote and prevent his victory. But what has happened since his election in terms of governmental action to address the urgent needs of the people?
Well, a very important part of those 2006 elections were that, although it is true that President Préval was able to win despite the efforts to rig the elections in favor of a much more conservative candidate, the legislative elections, that did not happen. President Preval had been president before. He had enormous name recognition. At the legislative level, the progressive candidates were effectively shut out. The party that's won every election it's ever contested in Haiti, the Lavalas party, did not participate at all because its candidates and its activists were in jail or getting killed. Other progressive parties didn't run because they were being attacked. Even President Preval had to cancel many rallies, including his final campaign rally, because his rallies were getting attacked, and neither the UN nor the government was effectively protecting him. And as a result of that, you have a legislature that's much more conservative than the Haitian people, and could not win another election. Most of the people in the legislature could not win a fair re-election battle, and as a result, you've got this paralysis where what the legislature wants to do is not what the people want to do. And under Haiti's government, it's a little bit complicated, but the government is formed based on a majority party in the legislature, or in the case of Haiti, where you don't have a majority party, you need to cobble together a coalition. And the needs of cobbling together that coalition have left the cabinet ministers there, not because they share any particular ideological position with the president or with the Haitian people, but because they can get a couple votes of confirmation. And so you have this kind of cobbled together government that isn't progressive and isn't effective. And so it's really been a couple lost years since 2006, where Haiti has not made great progress either in terms of advancing its democracy or in terms of creating the prosperity that will give the people their minimum needs to survive.
There are elections upcoming. Is there any possibility that this paralysis and right-wing unrepresentative government, as you're saying, that situation could be redressed through electoral means?
Right now, it's looking like it's going to be another lost opportunity, and that's been it's yet another series of lost opportunities. I mean, what Haiti needs is what the U.S., and Canada and other countries have had, which is several cycles of elections where people who please the voters win and people who don't please the voters lose, and instead you have a continual negotiation of power based on things other than electoral support, and it looks like that's going to happen again. Electoral Council, it's called the CEP, it's the Provisional Electoral Council, because 22 years after Haiti's constitution, the permanent council that constitution set up has never been selected. And so you've got this Electoral Council that was appointed mostly from representatives of political parties, again, not including Femi Lavalas, which is the biggest political party, and they found a way of excluding every single Femi Lavalas candidate. And again, by almost every account, Femi Lavalas would win most of the seats in the election, if not sweep all of them, and they're being kept out because for political reasons.
With that exclusion of the Lavalas party, what has happened to its own cohesion and political capacities?
Well, right now there's a split within the Lavalas party, and that was the pretext that the Electoral Council used to keep all of the Lavalas candidates out. There were two different groups that filed slates for the Senate elections coming up in April, and although they agreed on most of them, for each one there were four that differed, four Senate seats that differed, and that's what the CEP jumped on as their pretext. The sad thing, kind of what's behind this dispute is it's the same type of thing that the U.S. Democratic Party, for instance, went through with between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, where you have two different trends within the party that are fighting it out for supremacy, and that happens in all political parties. The problem is that because of the repression against Lavalas, that the normal ways of dealing with these kinds of disputes have been foreclosed. For instance, in Lavalas's position, the head of the party, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, is still in exile in South Africa and not allowed back in Haiti. You've got other people who were exiled. There's one kind of key leader who's always been a voice for unity is Levinsky Pierre Antoine, who was kidnapped a year and a half ago and hasn't been seen since. one of the people involved in the disputes is former Prime Minister Yvonne Neptune, and he spent 2 years in jail as a political prisoner, and the government is still keeping a case over his head to prevent him from running. So you have all these impediments that make it very difficult for the party to organize like a regular party, and unfortunately it's showing itself in the current dispute.
At the level of popular protests, and of which there have been many, of course, and constructive results in Haiti, what's the situation in that dimension?
It's been a little bit muted lately. I think the hurricane, things started picking up before the hurricanes hit, and then once that happened, I think people were just focused on survival. It appears now that's going to start again. There's supposed to be a lot of demonstrations this weekend. I haven't heard from Port-au-Prince today, so I don't know what has happened so far, but it seems like people are starting to take to the streets. And I think that the CEP decision to throw out all Lavalas candidates, I think that has probably galvanized people, because one of the issues that has slightly demobilized the Lavalas movement is their response to President Préval, because President Préval was elected in large part because of the Lavalas vote, and they assumed that he would govern very progressively. That hasn't happened, but the Lavalas members have struggled with how to react to that. On one hand, they don't want to be part of an opposition that leads to Préval's overthrow, because they know what overthrows in Haiti mean, but they also do want to find a way of registering their displeasure, and they've been struggling with that. I think that with the CEP decision, that makes people a little bit less reluctant to take to the streets, and I'm looking for a pretty strong buildup of popular activism over the next couple months.
To turn to the U.S. dimension of Haitian politics, what might Obama's election mean for U.S. Haiti policy?
It will certainly be an improvement over the Bush administration. I think it's highly unlikely that, as under the Bush administration, that Haiti's president will be forced to board a U.S. plane and sent to exile in Africa. But in terms of the details, it's hard to say right now. Obviously, President Obama has been preoccupied with the financial crisis and several other issues. Even in terms of foreign policy, there's Gaza, there's Guantanamo, and there's the Iraq War that are in line ahead of Haiti for his attention. But we're expecting some decent improvements. If you're looking at some of the appointments that Mr. Obama has been made, less Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, but people under her and people within the Department of Homeland Security that deal with immigration issues, you're seeing a lot less ideological people willing to look at the facts on the ground, and also people willing to really take into account democratic theory. I think that it was a great disservice that Canada and the United States did in 2004, where both of our countries spend a lot of time lecturing other people on democracy, but we got rid of President Aristide not because of democratic principles, but because we didn't like his policies. And it looks to me like the people that the Obama administration is appointing in kind of mid-level roles tend to be a little bit more principled and a little bit more willing to let a democratic process work, even if they don't necessarily agree with the people that process elects.
And in the Congress, are there forces there too that may become more active?
Certainly. There's several people that have been active, but they were sort of voices in the wilderness or voices in the opposition during most of the Bush administration years. And a lot of those people are moving up to more powerful positions and still care very much about Haiti. And that's probably more in the House of Representatives. Maxine Waters, John Conyers, Barbara Lee are kind of the leaders. Alcee Hastings are all leaders on that effort. And they've been moving up to higher and more influential positions over the last couple of years. In the Senate, you have less champions of Haiti, but you do have more champions of democracy. So people who might not say, oh, I like Lavalas, or I like Haiti, or I like President Aristide, or I like President Préval, but they will say, I like democracy, and we should support that. It'll both be a good and a bad with the financial crisis and all the other crises that the U.S. is dealing with. To some extent, that's going to divert resources, so I think it's going to be much harder to get money to support Haiti. But on the good side, you know, in the past, and I think both the U.S. and the Canadian governments have this problem, is that they do a lot of good things, but they also do a lot of bad things. And the Haitians have a proverb called "Lave men sui a terre," so wash your hands and dry them in the dirt. And I think that has a lot of Canadian and U.S. aid has done that, where they've done things like they've built courthouses, and then they've helped finance a group that knocked down the courthouses. And so you've got so having a little bit less U.S. attention and hopefully and Canadian attention might actually be an advantage for Haiti in the short run and even in the long term.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's a pleasure speaking with you.
It's a pleasure speaking with you, and thanks for covering the story.
Right. Take care. I've been speaking with Brian Concannon. He is a prominent human rights lawyer and the director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. And tomorrow in Vancouver, there is a meeting where you can get further information and discussion about the situation in Haiti. It will take place in the afternoon at Simon Fraser Harbor Center, which is at 515 West Hastings, 2 p.m. And the speaker will be Kevin Pina. He's a U.S. journalist and filmmaker who has lived and reported in Haiti from 2003 to 2006. And the meeting's organized by the Haiti Solidarity BC Organizing Committee.